Fanning. Weekends on 2FM.
And there you go, the song is called The First Day and it's from the album Fever Dreams, which is released this coming weekend, and the man who makes it all is on with us right now, and his name is Conor O'Brien. Conor, how you doing? Are you all right?
I'm good, thanks. How you doing, Dave?
I'm doing very well indeed. Let's take a look at this new album, Fever Dreams. It is kind of album number 5. In fact, the track we've heard there, it's The First Day, if you listen to it properly, of the rest of your life. Are you trying to tell us something here, Conor?
I was trying to make kind of sensory music, really, I guess. Something that wasn't too cerebral or, you know, overcooked or overthought. And it just came out as a big blast of exuberant positivity, which was a nice change for me.
Exuberance and positivity, a nice change for Conor O'Villager. Discuss. Okay, well, let's take a look at this here. I mean, like, you know, you went to the Another Love Story Festival in County Meath. Did this inspire the song we've just heard?
It did, yeah. Well, it was the initial inspiration. I came back from that festival and was just sort of buzzing and made a piece of electronic music kind of based on my time in the shift shack, which is what they call the little techno shack there. And it just became something different. I kind of turned it into a song, and then the final result was that sort of, yeah, celebratory, brass-infused, epic piece, if I do say so myself.
And did you kind of learn something from the festival itself? I mean, you mentioned the shift shack, and you can talk in the library there, and there's the Mellow Meadow, and it's Killian Manor, is that what it's called? I think it is, yeah.
That's the one, yeah.
And did you, I hope you attended the food frolics.
I did it all. It was quite the weekend.
Very good. Okay. It's a bespoke festival, okay, in County Meath. Okay. So, like, even the video itself, which you made with Daniel Brereton, is there more of that in there? Can we get more from the song, from the video? Because really it's an extension of the song, if you like.
Yeah. Well, he was a huge... I was really excited to get Daniel to work on it because he had done a couple of videos which I had really loved before, and especially there was an Errol Alkin video that he did, which just absolutely blew my mind. So it kind of connected in that sort of sense of he was doing weird psychedelic, kind of more techno-infused videos. And yeah, when we talked about it, we just wanted to represent the song again on a sensory level, and the idea of floating was brought up just to be the main kind of way of representing it visually, I guess.
Okay, the idea of floating and kind of escapism, and I could go into melted shapes and magical ambivalence of the dreams, but I won't for the moment. The whole dreamscape thing. Okay, so basically, you know, what were you kind of, like, I mean, if you take another thing that you were doing, which is night swimming on a Dutch island, were there things that you were doing that informs every one of these songs on the album?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of, the album sort of plays with time and space and stuff, so sometimes they're about like things that actually happened, you know, temporarily and stuff. But then other times it might just go much more internal, or maybe even cosmic. And it just kind of, it just keeps kind of melting.
Yeah, okay.
In my mind. Yeah.
Okay. Right. And so you're just going to have to get that from the album. But let's take a look at how it comes together, because if it was written over a couple of years, is it a question that the main kind of bodies of the songs were recorded kind of in a series together with a full band and that, and then you were able to noodle around in a studio for ages because the pandemic hit?
Yeah, definitely. It was it kind of reminded me of when I was sort of starting to make music and before I had like adult life things to do. When COVID hit, it just, you know, I was able to just 100% work on the album. And we had done about 5 full band sessions, and then the last day of those sessions was like the first day of lockdown. So we got it all in just in time. And then it was just a case of going a bit crazy for about a year and a half with all the files and all the audio and stuff.
So. And all the bits and pieces from elsewhere as well, or whatever you wanted to use. So let's take a look at that, because, you know, you say you refined them in your time in the small home studio. What does refine actually mean if the songs were kind of finished from a band?
I think, well, for me, it's layering it and making it, like, I really wanted to make an album which was kind of able to be enjoyed superficially, which I'd never really focused on before. And I wanted it to kind of be able to hit you, but then if you want to go deeper and if you want to do a headphone deep dive, there's loads more in there. And all that work had been done in the previous year. So there was refining it for me was just kind of making it accessible on certain levels and then accessible on deeper levels as well, kind of thing. So
okay, I do get that. And like, there's no doubt about it. If you want to put the headphones on and just dive right in, then there's an awful lot to dive right into. So on that note, like when you have the songs finished with a band or whatever it happens to be, is it a question of the kitchen sink, throw it in there? Or is it a question of just, you know, like kind of bells and whistles and putting lots of... For instance, like, you know, it was mixed by David Wrench. I don't know who produced it, but it was mixed by David Wrench, who did Frank Ocean and FKA Twigs and the XX and all the rest of it. So what did he do and what had you done that he didn't have to do? Like, who produced it?
Well, yeah, well, I guess I produced it, but I also did a mix of it. And I mixed my previous album, which I kind of slightly regretted because I thought, when I was doing this one, I listened back to my own mixes and I thought I was the king of the world and I thought I could do everything and it was incredible. And then someone persuaded me to ask someone else to do it. And I instantly thought of David Wrench because of his work with those people you already mentioned and also Caribou. And when he sent back the mixes that that he did, instantly I could hear everything that I'll never, ever be able to do. It's a whole other art form. Especially for a record like this, which is really based on textures and bass levels and like just the deep kind of emotional pleasures of music on a pure, you know, on the purest form kind of thing. So he just brought that extra level of texture to it, really. Yeah.
Okay, but I mean, you know, I did mention earlier on the Another Love Story Festival in County Meath that might have sort of informed what might be heard in the first day, that track that we played earlier on. But there's other stuff here in terms of the music. In fact, tell you what, I'm going to play this now, and even though I mightn't get to the very end of it, because it is the longest song of the album, and... you can tell me a little bit about this, especially about the second half if we don't get to hear it all, which is so simpatico. By the way, we're talking to Conor, as in Conor O'Brien from the Villagers, from Villagers, and the fifth album is coming out this coming weekend. It's called Fever Dreams. So simpatico. There you go, so simpatico, and it does go on a bit longer than that, of course, as well. That's from Villagers, and we're talking to Conor O'Brien. Conor, that track, you know, you do say there's certain people that have influenced you over the last while, and that's what you've often said about previous albums as well. Can I throw a bit of Duke Ellington into that, or maybe Alice Coltrane?
Oh, yeah, please do. That track was... I was also trying to sound like, you know, William Devon, Be Thankful for What You Got, all that kind of... super tight snare drum, groovy music. And then I asked my buddy Ben Castle to play a 3-minute sax solo, which he duly obliged. And it was really magic. The recording of that was incredible because he did the sax solo on like the Tuesday and he just did it over some acoustic tracks. And then the day later, the guys came in and they reacted all together to his solo. And so what you're hearing is like the drums reacting to hearing the solo for the first time and stuff. So it was definitely trying to use some sort of jazz tropes, which I'll never really achieve, but it's my weird version of it, I guess.
Okay, but also, you know, what you've been reading and looking at, for instance, like, you know, you've mentioned L.S. Lowry, who, like, we're talking art there, the industrial northeast of England paintings, etc. Was it Audre Lorde as well, the black lesbian mother warrior poet, Zami, better known as Flann O'Brien from this parish, David Lynch, the Twin Peaks, and a lot more besides. You threw all that into the mix in terms of what exactly, what, like, you got out of this album.
Well, the L.S. Lowry thing was more, I guess, well, I took a very rare holiday to Granada in Andalusia in Spain, and I was reading lots of this poet. He was a local poet called Federico Garcia Lorca, and he would have been buddies with Salvador Dali and the kind of the surrealist kind of movement. And I came across a local painter called Maripi Morales. I ended up staying in her son's house, and her stuff reminded me a lot of L.S. Lowry in terms of, it was pictures of her hometown, but it was definitely like you could tell it was a love letter to her hometown. But then you'd look up in the sky and like one of the children and would just be floating beside the moon or something. Or there'd always be a weird sort of surrealistic aspect to her love letters to the place where she grew up. And I just, yeah, I think that idea just kind of informed the album in terms of like wanting to write something full of warmth, but also having a slight weirdness to it, because that's, we're all living through very, very weird times. And I guess I sort of needed the music to sort of reflect that, you know.
Well, then, if you say weird's the realistic aspect, is that kind of bringing it back here, making it Irish? Thus, Flann O'Brien.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, Terry Policeman was a big one for me when I'd never read it before. I came very late to him, so that was something that I read while making this, and it especially informed the title track, Fever Dreams, because which fully plays with time and space and stuff. So, yeah. Mm.
And what about then, like film soundtrack people? There's a few others that you've mentioned there. Alessandro Alessandroni, is that right? And Pierre Umiliani. Yeah. Film scores there, and film scores and multi-instrumentalists, a bit of spaghetti western with all those guys. Tell me about them.
Yeah, just really beautiful music. I just love music from, well, usually like 68 to 75-ish. And I love the way it's recorded. And those two people were especially amazing Italian library music composers. And it's just really bold and really beautiful texturally. And I mean, I'm kind of dancing about architecture right now, so I don't really know what to say about it. It's just incredible music, you know.
That's more doable than the old myths will tell you it isn't. And like, also, like, when we're talking here, Conor O'Brien, we're talking two Ivor Novellos, we're talking two Mercury Music Prize nominations, a Critics' Choice Prize winner, you know, normal people. You've been on with Music Wise, you have a theme tune in another program on television. Nothing Arrives, 165 million streams. I mean, that looks like, wow, fantastic. You know, how many houses do you own? It's a tough time for musicians, isn't it?
That's pretty tough right now, because I've spent all morning trying to sort out a carnet to go over to Brexit Britain. So, yeah, it's getting harder, but what's the question?
I don't know. I'm just saying, like, you know, for everybody else too, and even like the price of kind of living in Dublin, if you want to be where the centre of the music is supposed to be, it's not easy. Sure it isn't.
No, I mean, that's a whole gigantic discussion there, right there, but it's not easy.
Okay, well, like, I'm allowed to ask you, even though it's the standard question, how did you get on in lockdown? But I mean, the whole thing, like, of before that, you had been talking about, like, you know, everybody's tech dependency, and it's just getting out of hand, and the phones and that. Did you manage with all the people I've just mentioned in terms of painters and in terms of film score people and in terms of books, did you manage to go there and put the damn phone down?
Sometimes. I mean, I definitely read a lot more literature than I would have if lockdown hadn't happened, and that was cool. But I probably also looked at my phone more. I probably just did everything that you would do stuck in your apartment more. But I think there's something to be said for, you know, seeing this internet age that we're in as a sort of, we're at the beginnings of it. And I think there's a certain language isn't necessarily benefiting, and you know, the idea of, I think art and music is really good at emphasizing how complicated and messy we all are, and how nuanced and strange things can be. And I think the internet is very good at making everything really binary and everyone shouting at each other and stuff. So I think some of the album kind of deals with that, especially the song called Circles in the Firing Line, which literally just explodes in a sort of childish screaming anger at the end.
Childish screaming anger, which I don't normally associate with Villagers. It's like, wow, did that go on to a different track there? Let me go back over and check it out. It's the last sort of, in fact, it's the last very short bit, because it really seems to be getting going, and you cut it out as quick as it comes in.
Yeah, but we just played Latitude Festival and we rocked it out for a lot longer. So if you come to a show, you'll see that. Yeah, you'll see that kind of fully expanded.
All right, so rocking out Villagers. Well, because I thought you might be going in a different direction, i.e. jazz.
Well, I don't know. Jazz is a big word, isn't it? Like, I mean, I'm just really into music that you can tell a lot of work and discipline has been put into it. And in terms of jazz, I guess I was listening to like Alice Coltrane and Pharoah Sanders and that whole spiritual jazz side. But also I'm just as interested in big band stuff and really, really organized music. And like, I was really obsessed with an album called Masterpieces by Duke Ellington, which was, I think it was out in 1950. So it's like quite a long time after the big band era, when he was revisiting stuff, and he'd sort of already, you know, peaked, but then he started peaking again. And I just get really inspired by the sound of a hell of a lot of work being put into something, and discipline being put into something. And I feel like that to me is what jazz is kind of about. And it's also an unreachable thing for me because I just don't have the chops and I never will, because I grew up listening to, you know, indie rock. Sure. And all that stuff. So it's always, there's always the magical kind of element to it for me.
Fever Dreams, by the way, is the name of the album. It's out this coming weekend. And with all the stuff that you've just mentioned there, Conor, it's Villagers, of course. You know, anything at all that happens to you, anything at all that you do, anything at all that you read, take in, suck in, whatever it happens to be, you allow that always to, what I would say, I'll call, fuel the writing process, right?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Try to stay open.
I mean, if you think of the last album, you had a song on it by Ada Lovelace. I don't even know where that would have come from. Lord Byron's daughter. He was a 19th century mathematician. I had never heard of her till you did that song.
Yeah, she's sort of billed as the first computer programmer. But I think a man got the title eventually.
Really? That's unusual. Okay. All right. So, in fact, also, I mean, when you take songs like Hot Scary Summer and Little Bigot as well, and Darling Arithmetic, previous stuff that you've done. You know, you have one line in Courage, it took a little time to be honest, it took a little time to be me. Have members of the gay community come to you now and suddenly realise, oh, did I really want to put myself out there to the point where I have to maybe be not a spokesperson, I'm not asking that, not even to be looked up to necessarily, but somebody might have to answer a question?
Not really. I'm not really very interested in being a spokesperson for anyone.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, things are really complicated. And if you start sort of being tribal about your identity or who you are or your ideas, then it just, you've kind of already lost the battle of being a sophisticated, nice person. So not really, no. I think I just write songs and sometimes they're emotional and sometimes they're personal and sometimes they're...
Yeah.
A little bit more socio-political or whatever. So,
do you feel that your music now is more focused than it used to be? And I don't even know if that's necessarily always a good thing.
I think I've started actually trying to make enjoyable music for the first time. Well, like, as in, one of my main focuses is to make music, which I think might be enjoyable for somebody who just wants to have a little dance or a boogie, you know? Whereas before, it was kind of all about expressing some sort of deep indignant feeling, and I still have that, but I think as you get older you start realizing music is really where you need to go for the warmth and the connection and the joy, and I think that's starting to feed its way into my process a lot more.
And what about other countries and other cities and other places that the music has taken you to, or that you mentioned a holiday there as well that can take you to? I mean, what does that do? For instance, like, you know, when you're touring, even 10 years ago, when that, what do you call it, the Reykjavik, the eruption of the Icelandic thingy-bob, that stopped you going to a few dates and you had to call off one or two because nobody could move around Europe at that time. But I mean, they're just fun things you look back on of the madness of touring. What about Madrid? You were in Madrid recently, at least I think you were. Any good?
Well, not that recently.
Oh, right.
Probably, I'm guessing more than 2 years ago. But
right.
Yeah, Madrid's cool. Have you visited?
I have, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I love Madrid. It's a great place.
And would you like, were you holidaying there? Do you write songs there? Is that when you do? Is that what happens?
Well, no, I wrote, I wasn't writing when I was in Madrid, but I was writing when I was in Granada, which is also in Spain, obviously. And that was the beginnings of Sociopatico, and I guess that's a Spanish word and also an Italian word, and so I suppose stuff does feed in different ways, you know, where you are physically, and but I just have a phone which is just full of voice memos constantly, and it's just lots and lots of little ideas, and whenever you finally find the time to sit down and order them and get them all together and figure out if there was some sort of synchronicity happening for the previous year. Maybe themes start to, repeat themselves and stuff, and that's usually like the universe telling you need to start going in a certain direction artistically or whatever.
Okay, well, you'll be on tour because you've got a bunch of dates in England, but I just want to give you the Irish ones. It's Villagers on November the 2nd at the Opera House in Cork, the 3rd Set Theatre Kilkenny, the 4th Dolan's in Limerick, the 5th Black Box in Galway, the 7th Empire Music Hall in Belfast, and then it's Vicar Street on December the 11th. Isn't that it?
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Super excited.
Back home in so many ways, all right. Okay, well, listen, it's been a pleasure as usual, Conor. Thank you so much indeed for talking to us on the programme today.
Thanks so much, Dave.
And good luck with the album. Can I play a bit of the title track now, which is Fever Dreams is what it's called. I play
oh,
with
yes,
that.
The okay. weird one.
That's
the,
yeah.
Too.
By the way, who's the vocal? Or sorry, who's the female vocal that comes in?
well, that was it, actually my friend Siobhan Kane. She was doing a lockdown broadcast for another Love Story Festival, actually. And I just, while it was being broadcast live, I pressed record on my studio and then freaked her out by sending songs to her later that evening and then pitched her voice down, which she wasn't very happy
All
about.
Right, well, look, I'm going to give, I'm going to give the title track a go now. Just remember, it's November 2. It's Cork, then Kilkenny, Dolan's Limerick, Black Box, Galway, Empire Music Hall, Belfast. That's on the 7th. And then in December, it's December the 11th, it's Vicar Street in Dublin. Four Villagers, the album's out next weekend. I'm going to give you the title track now called Fever Dreams. Conor O'Villager, good man yourself, Conor. Thanks a million for talking to us on the programme today. Good luck.
Cheers, Dave.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.